Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Students at campuses across this country and across the world who opposed and oppose genocide in Palestine were on the right side of history. They still are. We still are. History will judge the war criminals who have slaughtered tens and tens of thousands of innocent civilians in Gaza, starving them, letting them die of thirst of their wounds, funding, arming this genocide.
Rashid Khalidi, the renowned Edward Said Professor Emeritus of Modern Arab Studies at Columbia University, says he's withdrawing from teaching his fall course due to the school's major new deal with Trump. He says, quote, the university's draconian policies and new definition of anti-Semitism make much teaching impossible. We'll speak with Rashid Khalidi, author of, among other books, The Hundred Years' War on Palestine. Then a ProPublica investigation reveals how hundreds of Venezuelan men deported to El Salvador, then released to Venezuela by the Trump administration, say they endured months of physical and mental abuse inside the Salvadoran prison SECAT.
The United States sent us to El Salvador so that El Salvador could do the dirty work that the U.S. couldn't, and justice will only come through the truths and testimonies of each of us.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. At least six more Palestinians in Gaza have starved to death in the past 24 hours as famine spreads across the besieged strip. At least 181 Palestinians, including 94 children, have now died from hunger-related causes in Gaza. Meanwhile, Israeli forces killed at least 92 Palestinians Sunday, including 56 who died while seeking food and aid. Another 34 Palestinians have been killed so far today. On Sunday, an Israeli strike hit the headquarters of the Palestinian Red Crescent Society in Khan Yunis. One staff member was killed. Meanwhile, Israel has asked the Red Cross to intervene and help provide food and medical treatment for Israeli hostages in Gaza. The call came after Hamas and Islamic Jihad released videos showing two emaciated hostages. The Palestinian groups denied the hostages were being intentionally starved, but a spokesperson for Islamic Jihad said, quote, they will not receive any special privilege amidst the crime of starvation and siege, unquote. The broadcast of the hostage videos prompted a new wave of protests in Israel, calling for an end to the war and the release of all the hostages. Tens of thousands of protesters were in Tel Aviv on Saturday night. This comes as the Israeli military is threatening to expand its war on Gaza. A group of 600 retired Israeli security officials have written a letter to President Trump to urge him to pressure Israel to end the war. Signatories include three former heads of Mossad. In Gaza, a grieving mother shared this message for President Trump after Israeli forces fatally shot her 16-year-old son while he was seeking aid.
Trump wants us to send a thank you letter. What thank you letter does he want us to send him? Let him come and see my little son, a child. This is my third son. A month ago, one killed, and this third one killed today. He went to get food and drink, soaked in blood. Go see the flower throne filled with the blood of people who were killed and the martyrs lying there.
Israeli authorities are continuing to refuse to release the body of the Palestinian activist Oda Havelin, who was fatally shot by an Israeli settler last Monday in the occupied West Bank. Israel's also still detaining seven members of his family. 60 Palestinian women from the village of Ahayir began a hunger strike Thursday to demand justice. On Sunday, Israelis also held demonstrations in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem to protest the killing of Hadalin, who worked on the Oscar-winning film No Other Land. Meanwhile, Israeli authorities have released the settler accused of killing Hadalin, Yinon Levy. He'd been under house arrest. Earlier this year, the Trump administration lifted the Biden-era sanctions on Yinon Levy. Meanwhile, Israel's far-right National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir has sparked outrage after he led a large group to pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied East Jerusalem. Jordan decried Ben-Gvir's visit, calling it a flagrant violation of international law, unquote. Mass protests against Israel's war on Gaza continue around the world. In Australia, as many as 300,000 people marched across the Sydney Harbour Bridge in one of Sydney's largest protests ever. Participants included the formerly imprisoned WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Here in New York, about 50 Jewish activists and their allies were arrested Friday while protesting at the offices of New York Senators Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand to denounce their votes against halting arms shipments to Israel. The bill was sponsored by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. In Texas, Republican Governor Greg Abbott is threatening to arrest and expel Democratic state legislators from office if they don't return to the state capitol by this afternoon. More than 50 Democrats left Texas to block the passage of a new congressional map, which was gerrymandered to give Republicans five extra seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. Governor Abbott was reportedly hesitant about redrawing the state's congressional map until Trump called the governor and pushed for it. This is Democratic State Representative Ron Reynolds.
And today, in the spirit of John Lewis, I decided to make some good and necessary trouble by breaking quorum, because the Abbott-Trump takeover is not acceptable on my watch. I am here today to stand up for our democracy, stand up for black and brown Texans that will be disenfranchised by this hostile racial gerrymandering.
President Trump fired the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics Friday, hours after the agency released a weaker-than-expected jobs report. Trump wrote on social media the numbers were, quote, rigged in order to make the Republicans and me look bad, he wrote. Trump presented no evidence suggesting the numbers were rigged. Trump's firing of Erica McIntyre-Farr was widely criticized. Former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers spoke to ABC Friday.
This is the stuff of democracies giving way to authoritarianism. Firing statisticians goes with threatening the heads of newspapers. It goes with launching assaults on universities. It goes with launching assaults on law firms.
The Corporation for Public Broadcasting has announced it's shutting down after President Trump signed a law clawing back $1.1 billion in funding for public broadcasting. Most staff positions are set to end next month, and a small transition team will stay until January to close out any remaining work. The CPB was founded in 1967. Helps pay for PBS, NPR, and 1,500 local radio and television stations across the United States. Stations in rural and poorer areas of the country rely heavily on the CPB's grants to operate. Many are expected to close. In international news, the UN's migration agency says at least 68 Ethiopian migrants have died and 74 others are missing after a boat capsized off the coast of Yemen. There were only 12 survivors. In recent months, hundreds of migrants from Africa fleeing poverty and conflict have died or gone missing in shipwrecks as they attempt to reach wealthy Gulf Arab countries through Yemen. Former Colombian President Álvaro Uribe has been sentenced to 12 years of house arrest after being found guilty of witness tampering and bribery. Uribe was convicted of bribing imprisoned members of paramilitary groups to coax them into retracting damaging testimony, exposing his ties to right-wing paramilitary groups. Uribe was a close U.S. ally who ruled Colombia from 2002 to 2010. In news from Washington, D.C., the Office of Special Counsel says it's probing Jack Smith, the former Justice Department official who led the investigations of President Trump's efforts to overthrow the results of the 2020 election. Smith's being investigated for potentially violating the Hatch Act, which prevents federal officials from participating in political activity. The Office of Special Counsel opened its investigation at the urging of Republican Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, who claims Smith was trying to influence the 2024 election. A federal judge has blocked the Trump administration from quickly deporting immigrants who were granted parole to live and work in the United States. The Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights, the UndocuBlack Network, and CASA challenged the Department of Homeland Security's policies in court, which enabled ICE officers to arrest immigrants who were offered temporary protective status at the ports of entry in the U.S. The Biden administration had allowed Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans and Venezuelans a legal pathway to immigrate to the United States. But in March, the Trump administration revoked parole for those groups. More than a dozen states filed a lawsuit Friday to block the Trump administration from investigating hospitals and doctors who provide gender-affirming care to children. The complaint argues in attempting to prosecute medical providers, the Trump administration's trying to put in place a national ban on puberty blockers, hormone therapy, and surgeries for transgender children. Earlier this year, President Trump signed an executive order banning federal funds from going to medical schools and hospitals that provide gender-affirming care for minors. Currently, more than half of all states have laws that restrict or outright ban transition care for children. Ghislaine Maxwell has been moved from Florida to a minimum security prison camp in Texas just days after she met with Deputy U.S. Attorney General Todd Blanche, formerly President Trump's personal attorney. This comes as pressure grows on President Trump to release files about Maxwell's longtime associate, the serial sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Maxwell is serving a 20-year sentence for conspiring with Epstein to sexually abuse and traffic young girls. And more than 3,000 union members who assemble Boeing's fighter jets in Missouri and Illinois went on strike today after contract negotiations failed. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, District 837, the union that represents the workers, says the strike is, quote, about respect, dignity, not empty promises, unquote. The work stoppage comes after the union rejected a contract offered by Boeing. According to the union, the workers assemble and maintain weapon systems, missile and defense technology, and aircraft, including F-15 and FA-18 fighter jets. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, Rashid Khalidi, the renowned Edward Said Professor Emeritus of Modern Arab Studies at Columbia University, is withdrawing from teaching his fall course due to the school's new deal with President Trump. He says the university's draconian policies and new definition of anti-Semitism make much teaching impossible. Stay with us. Thank you. Info, Something to Say by Fatoumata Jawara, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. One by one, major universities have been making deals with the Trump administration. In the most comprehensive of all the deals with schools so far, Columbia University recently agreed to pay a $200 million settlement to the Trump administration after it accused the university of failing to protect Jewish students during campus protests against Israel's assault on Gaza. Columbia will also pay $21 million to settle investigations brought by the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, by agreeing to end the consideration of race in admissions and hiring. The settlements will restore hundreds of millions of dollars worth of canceled or frozen grants from National Institutes of Health and Department of Health and Human Services. As part of the deal, Columbia also agreed to appoint a senior provost to oversee the Middle East Studies Department, will further crack down on campus protests, and will appoint 36 new security officers with arrest powers. The agreement includes a little reported provision that commits Columbia to, quote, examine its business model and take steps to decrease financial dependence on international student enrollment. For more on this major settlement, we're joined by Rashid Khalidi. He's the Edward Said Professor Emeritus of Modern Arab Studies at Columbia University and author of several books, including The 100 Years War on Palestine. He has a new essay in The Guardian. It's headlined, I Spent Decades at Columbia, I'm Withdrawing My Fall Course Due to Its Deal with Trump. The university's draconian policies and new definition of anti-Semitism make much teaching impossible, he wrote. In the piece, Khalidi explains why he now finds it impossible to teach at Columbia, given its adoption of International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, or IHRA's definition of anti-Semitism, and cites parts of his lecture that would run afoul of it. Khalidi writes, quote, the IHRA definition deliberately, mendaciously, and disingenuously conflates Jewishness with Israel so that any criticism of Israel or indeed description of Israeli policies becomes a criticism of Jews. Citing its potential chilling effect, a co-author of the IHRA definition, Professor Kenneth Stern, has repudiated its current uses. Yet Columbia has announced that it will serve as a guide in disciplinary proceedings, unquote. Khalidi also writes in the piece, quote, it's not only faculty members' academic freedom and freedom of speech that's infringed upon by Columbia's capitulation to Trump's diktat. Teaching assistants would be seriously constrained in leading discussion sections, as would students in their questions and discussions, by the constant fear that informers would snitch on them to the fearsome apparatus that Columbia has erected to punish speech critical of Israel and to crack down on alleged discrimination, unquote. Professor Rashid Khalidi joins us now from France. Professor Khalidi, welcome back to Democracy Now! We've read some of your rationale. I'm sure there are hundreds of students who are extremely disappointed to hear that you're not going to be teaching this course. Though you did retire, you are continuing with this course. Can you more fully explain why you've said no to Columbia?
Well, you already laid out. Thanks for having me, Amy. Again, I'm sorry that for 22 months, you and I have been talking about this same genocide. And that's the background to my decision. You've already mentioned a couple of the reasons that I gave. Columbia has agreed to a number of conditions that the Trump administration wanted to impose. You mentioned some of them. Another of them is the imposition of an outside monitor, so-called, who will have access to absolutely everything, including classrooms, meetings, and so forth, to ensure compliance with the various diktats of the Trump administration. Basically, it's going to be impossible to teach a whole range of topics, not just including modern Middle East history or the history of Palestine or Israel, but things like genocide, things like settler colonialism, things like the Holocaust. One of my distinguished colleagues, a Holocaust scholar, Marianne Hirsch, has just mentioned in an interview that she's not going to be able to teach. She's also retired, but like me, was also teaching a course, in fact, I believe, on the Holocaust. And she said, I cannot teach this course under the IRA definition because it makes it almost impossible to say certain things which are critical of either Zionism or Israel. She said, how can I teach Hannah Arendt? Hannah Arendt, one of the great figures of the 20th century, was an anti-Zionist. She's also one of the great commentators and writers about the Holocaust. She said, I can't teach Hannah Arendt. Somebody's going to come and lodge one of these spurious complaints under this new dispensation. And I'm going to be brought up before a kangaroo court. And that's essentially what Columbia has agreed with the Trump administration to establish, as has already happened to her and as has happened to a number of my colleagues. And so I figured I had to take a stand. I mean, they have been putting pressure on faculty and students really since the war began to shut down any advocacy for Palestine, any opposition to this horrific genocide. You ran a piece at the very beginning of this segment where you quoted a speech that I gave a year ago talking about how the students are on the right side of history. They are. A year later, it's even more true. The starvation, the mass death, the extraordinary callousness that Israel has shown have been exposed to the world. You don't have 300,000 people crossing Sydney Bridge in Australia unless they realize that something horrific is happening at the hands of Israel. So I realize that I simply cannot teach under these circumstances in this institution. And the last thing I want to say is this is not just a capitulation to the Trump administration. This was an inside job. There was a fifth column. Members of the Board of Trustees, senior members of the faculty of some of the professional schools, and a clutch of donors who have been beating the drums for years and years, more than a decade, to the effect that Columbia is deeply, profoundly anti-Semitic. This is a despicable lie. It simply means that their sensibilities and their unbounded support for Israel are offended by the fact that some people are sticking up for Palestinian rights. This is not a new phenomenon at Columbia. This fifth column, working from within the Board of Trustees, among a minority of the faculty, and a few students, have been trying to get Columbia to do these things. In fact, one of them admitted it. She said, I'm glad we've been forced to do this. These are things we wanted to do all along.
I wanted to go back to your essay where you said, citing its potential chilling effect, a co-author of the IRA definition, Professor Kenneth Stern, has repudiated its current uses. Talk more about that.
Well, Ken Stern was one of the people who helped to write this, and he intended it for an entirely different purpose, not to be used to punish speech in support of Palestine, not to be used to punish people who say certain things about Zionism, things that have been said by leading Jewish intellectuals for over 100 years. He never intended that the definition that he helped to co-author would be used for these purposes to discipline and punish academics and students and others. And that is the way it has been weaponized, as a tool to protect Israel from criticism, as a tool to perfect this political ideology of Zionism from criticism, by arguing that any criticism of Israel, or virtually any criticism of Israel, and virtually any criticism of Zionism are anti-Semitic, that they are directed at the entirety of the Jewish people, which is, of course, nonsense, because the majority of the Jewish people didn't even support Zionism until about 100 years ago, or less than 100 years ago. Majorities of them were opposed to Zionism. Most anti-Zionists were Jewish up through the middle of the 20th century. But this definition has been concocted by the International Holocaust Remembrance Association, not in order to remember the Holocaust, to prevent any criticism or many criticisms of Israel and of Zionism. And that is what Ken Stern was objecting to. And he's been objecting to it quite vigorously. I understand that he spoke to the Board of Trustees at their invitation to try and persuade them not to take this step. And of course, that had no impact on them.
And of course, many of the protesters across the country and at Columbia are Jewish. I wanted to get your response to the acting Columbia president, Claire Shipman, speaking to the Columbia Daily Spectator, the student newspaper. She defended the deal with the Trump administration, saying, quote, "I think we were able to craft an agreement that's in line with our values and doesn't cross any of the red lines we articulated. So I understand that narrative. And as a former journalist, I understand the power of narrative and I understand the power of simple narrative. But this is a very complex situation. I think that the process we move through is actually the right one for this institution." Professor Hallady, can you respond to Columbia's acting president, Claire Shipman?
I think she's acting as a mouthpiece for what I call this fifth column within the Board of Trustees, within the donor community, and among a few senior faculty in the professional schools, for whom any critique of Israel is unacceptable. Certainly many critiques of Israel are unacceptable, and many critiques of Zionism are unacceptable. I don't think that the values of Columbia include a government-appointed monitor from a company that in June celebrated Israel's independence or celebrated Israel. To be able to go into classrooms, to be able to go into meetings, to be able to harvest our data. If that's the value that Columbia stands for, it's a Stasi value. It's a dictatorial value where the government appoints a monitor to check on what is happening inside an independent private university. What values are protected by the IHRA definition? The only value that's being protected is Israel's impunity as it commits genocide. There are many other aspects of the settlement, the appointment of a special provost, a vice provost. Why does Middle East studies require scrutiny? What's wrong with what's being taught at Columbia? These are enormously popular courses. They represent the scholarship of a vast array of people, not just the people teaching at Columbia. They represent basically the most respected scholarship in the field. There's no need for a vice provost to supervise Middle East studies at Columbia any more than there's a need for it to supervise. This is intended, by the way, to go further and to cover other area studies. And undoubtedly, as the Trump administration squeezes and squeezes, we'll be talking about race, we'll be talking about gender, we'll be talking about Columbia's expansion into Harlem at the expense of the local community. Those things are going to be verboten. You're not going to be allowed to speak about race. You're not going to be allowed to speak about gender, just as you're soon not going to be allowed to speak about, you're now not allowed under these rules to speak about certain aspects of Israel and Zionism.
I wanted to compare Columbia's response to Harvard. This is in the Harvard Crimson. Harvard President Alan Garber has told faculty a deal with the Trump administration's not imminent, denied the university's considering a $500 million settlement, according to three faculty members familiar with the matter. University seriously considering resolving its dispute with the White House through the courts rather than a negotiated settlement, Garber said, according to these three faculty members. Your response, Rashid Khalidi.
Like Columbia, Harvard practiced anticipatory obedience, closing down an exchange program with Beer Zeit University. This happened months ago. Firing the two people who had the Middle East Center, shutting down a program at the Divinity School related to Palestine. They have already kowtowed. They have already done what was asked of them. They've already accepted IHRA, the same draconian strictures on speaking about Israel and on speaking about Zionism were already adopted by Harvard, even before Columbia adopted them. So Garber's tough talk relates basically to money, which incidentally is the value that these universities cherish above all else. Their contempt for their students, their contempt for their faculty is unbounded. Their attention to the bottom line is unlimited. And that's the reason I decided to retire several years ago, long before the war in Gaza, long before any of this happened. I saw an institution that was not driven by pedagogical and educational values, an institute that had contempt for its community, that had contempt for its students, that had contempt for its faculty, and was led by people, none of whom in the Board of Trustees, with one or two possible exceptions, knows anything about education. They're a bunch of hedge fund managers, government bureaucrats, and lawyers. With all respect to those three categories, they don't know squat about education. And those are the people who are leading Columbia and most other private universities. Politicians, ex-politicians, government bureaucrats, lawyers, hedge fund managers, and so forth. And those are the people who have decided, for whatever reason, whether because they sympathize with an attempt to shut down any kind of protest against Israel's genocide, or whether they really don't want the faculty. I mean, one of the things that they have promised the Trump administration here at Columbia is to re-